2:11. For one must not consecrate as holy either the sweetnesses of bodily pleasures or the loose and puffed up exaltations of the soul, things that are by their very nature profane and unholy. Is it not, then, fitting that the prophetic word, by name Moses, speaking with solemnity, should say, "You shall remember all the way by which the Lord your God led you in the wilderness, that he might afflict you and test you, and that it might be known what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he afflicted you and made you hungry, and fed you with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might declare to you that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds through the mouth of God." Deut. 8:2-3. Who then is so impious as to suppose that God is one who afflicts, and that famine, that most pitiable destruction, is brought by him upon those who cannot live without food? For he is good and the cause of good things, a benefactor, a savior, a nourisher, a bestower of wealth, a giver of great gifts, having driven wickedness out from his sacred boundaries. For it was thus that he exiled from paradise the burdens of the earth, both Adam and Cain. Let us not then be led astray by mere words, but let us consider what is signified through the hidden meanings, and say that he afflicted is equivalent to he disciplined and admonished and brought to his senses. While he tried by famine, did not produce a lack of food and drink, but of pleasures and desires, of fears and grief and wrongdoings, and in sum of all the works either of vice or of passion. And what follows next bears witness to this. He fed you with manna. Is it fitting to call famine an affliction, or on the contrary the cause of abundance and prosperity, of freedom and good order, that food which, without toil and without hardship on the part of men, apart from effort, was given not from the earth as is customary but from heaven, a prodigious work, provided for the benefit of those who would partake of it? But the many, the herd-like, suppose that those who are nourished on divine words live wretchedly and miserably, for they have never tasted the all-nourishing taste of wisdom, while those who live amid comforts and pleasures are unaware that they thus, then, a certain kind of affliction is beneficial, so much so that even its lowliest form, slavery, has been reckoned a great good. And this a father in the sacred writings prayed for his son, the excellent Isaac, for the foolish Esau. For he said somewhere, "By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother." Gen 27:40, judging it most advantageous for the one who chooses war instead of peace, and who, as it were, bears arms in battle because of the faction and turmoil within his soul, to become obedient and to serve, and to obey in everything whatever commands the lover of self-control lays upon him. From this, I think, one of the disciples of Moses, named Peaceable, who in his ancestral tongue is called Solomon, says, "My son, do not disdain the discipline of God, and do not grow faint when reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines whom he loves, and scourges every son whom he receives." Prov. 3:11-12. So it is that rebuke and admonition have been reckoned so noble a thing that through them acknowledgement of God becomes kinship with him. For what is closer to a son than a father, or to a father than a son? But so that we may not seem to draw out our discourse by stringing argument upon argument, we will offer, apart from what has already been said, the clearest possible proof that a particular kind of affliction is the work of virtue. For there is a law of this sort: you shall not afflict any widow or orphan, but if you afflict them with wickedness. Exod. 22:22. What does this mean? Can one be afflicted by anything other than wickedness? For if afflictions are the work of wickedness alone, then it is superfluous to write down what is already agreed upon, and it would be affirmed even without the addition. He will certainly say, "I know of one who is reproved by virtue and disciplined by wisdom as well." Therefore, I do not hold every affliction blameworthy, but the affliction that is the work of justice and lawgiving, for it brings a person to soundness of mind through rebuke. This I admire above all, while the affliction that arises from folly and wickedness, being harmful, this I turn away from and rightly condemn. So then, whenever you hear that Hagar was afflicted by Sarah, do not suppose that anything of what customarily happens in the jealousies of women took place. For the discourse is not about women, but about minds, the one still being trained in the preliminary studies, the other already contending in the contests of virtue.